The following shiur has been presented by Dayan Shlomo Cohen, Dayan based in Havat Shalom, Yerushalayim, and author of the Choshen Mishpat work, Pure Money, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havan Halacha Center.
For Hetrei Iska, loans and collections, please call the center at 1-888-485-VAAD or visit thehalachacenter.org.
Hello everybody, this is Rabbi Shlomo Cohen with a shiur on Parshat Nitzavim. Parshat Nitzavim is the parsha of Tshuva. It's the parsha that we're reading just before Rosh Hashanah generally, and that's the way it comes out this year as well. It's a time for thinking about our actions and our ways and making some improvements. It's also my birthday. It was my bar mitzvah parsha, so I have a special connection to Parashat Nitzavim. Rosh Hashanah, we're told, is the day of judgment. But there's a very poignant question that needs to be asked here. If you're going to be judged on Rosh Hashanah, then what's going to happen after 120 years when we go to the world of truth upstairs? What are we going to be judged on? We know that that's the world, that's the place for judgment. That's the time where our rabbis tell us, our sages tell us, that we're going to be judged for everything that we've done during our lifetime. Everything's going to pass in front of us like a video on a video screen, and we're going to see everything we've did and have to give account for everything. But so if so, what is the day of judgment? What is Rosh Hashanah? Does that mean that someone who dies a month after Rosh Hashanah is only going to be judged for a month when he gets to heaven? Because he's just been judged. Every year he's been judged for everything he did every year. So there's nothing more to judge him for apart from the things that he did from the last Rosh Hashanah until today, the day that he dies. Is that what happens when we get to the next world? That's not what we've been told. That's not what we've been made to understand. You can't be judged twice for the same things. That's not fair. So what's happening on Rosh Hashanah? What's the judgment on Rosh Hashanah if we know that we're going to actually be judged for everything in the next world? The answer is, as every businessman knows, at the end of the year, beginning of the new year, you have to make a budget. You have to look at your performance over the last year. You may have a number of different branches. You have to look at the performance of each branch and decide how to invest your available funds for the next year. How do we do that? We look at the performance of each of our branches. Let's say you had two branches in your business. Make it very simple. One branch in the north. There in the last year you invested 10 million and you got a return of 1 million. 10%. There's another branch in the south where you just invested 1 million. And you got a return of 200,000. So our businessman is now going to look at these two branches. And what's he going to say? Is he going to say, well, hang on, what am I going to do next year? The branch in the north made a profit of 1 million. That's pretty good. And the branch in the south only made a profit of 200,000. So maybe next year I should carry on investing in the branch in the north, because they're making more money. That's not how the way an astute businessman is going to make his calculations. That's not the way he's going to plan his budget. He's going to look at the percentage return that he got from each branch. The branch in the north gave me a 10% return on my investment. The branch in the south gave me a 20% return on my investment. So where am I going to invest my money next year? In the South, even though they made less money, because there's a bigger return on my investment, so it's worth investing more funds there next year. That's what God is doing to us on Rosh Hashanah. He's looking at the resources that we had last year, at the things that he made available to us last year. We had, Baruch Hashem, good parnasah, we had good health, we had free time from our business. And what did we do with that? What did we do with the extra money that we had? Did we give it to charities? Did we invest it in learning Torah? Or did we use it to have fancy holidays and buy fancy cars? The good health that we had, what did we do with it last year? Did we use that good health to do good things with our time? Or did we just use our good health to go skiing in the winter? There's nothing wrong with skiing in the winter. But let's use our health for other things as well. What did we do with the great gifts that we've been given from Hashem? Did we invest them properly? Did we use them for good purposes or not? That's what Hashem is looking at on Rosh Hashanah. He's not going to judge us for that. He's not now deciding what's going to be our reward and what's going to be our punishment. No, that's not for now. That's after 120 years. That's when we pass away. Then that's going to be happen. That's the real day of judgment. Rosh Hashanah is the day of the budget. It's budget day. Budget day is the day that Hashem is going to look at the resources that he gave us last year, and he's going to look at how that money was invested. Maybe he didn't give us good parnasah last year, but nevertheless we gave a lot of charity. Maybe he didn't give us good health and he didn't give us free time, but nevertheless we did mitzvot all the time. We invested, we went to visit the sick, we went to look after people, do kindness, helping people in distress. And so therefore Hashem is going to say, wow, that's like the branch in the South. A very small investment and a big return. There I'm going to invest next year. Next year let's give this guy a lot of money. Let's give this guy good health. Let's give him nachat from all his family. Because he's a good investment. Right? Of course, no one knows exactly how Hashem does this. As I'm sure you understand, we're trying to understand what goes on. This is the type of thing that's going on. It's a budget. It's not a judgment. It's a judgment in order to decide about the future. So, what is our work during these days if that's so? We have to show Hashem that we are a good investment. We have to be showing Hashem this is our last chance now, in the little while before Rosh Hashanah, and in the time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, to say to Hashem, Hashem, I'm a good investment. Invest in me. And let me prove to you, and let me show you during this time, what a good investment I am. We're told that Yom Kippur can only atone for the Averot between Hashem and us. Things that we've done to Hashem. Not keeping his commandments. Not acting in the way he wants us to act. But if there's an argument between people, if there's a problem between people, then you have to appease the person. Yom Kippur won't atone for things that we've done between each other until you appease the person that you have harmed, whether it's by stealing from them, damaging them, talking badly about them. All these things are things that we have to make up ourselves, and Yom Kippur won't atone for them until we've fixed these things up with the people that we've harmed. So let's say that you've stolen from someone, but you don't know who. What are you going to do? How is it possible to make up something like that? A guy once came up to me on the eve of Yom Kippur, and he said to me, he said, Rabbi, I want to tell you, when I was a young man, I had a hobby. I used to go down the street with a screwdriver in my pocket, and whenever I would see a nice car, I would take out my screwdriver and take off the emblem. I have in my bedroom a collection of hundreds of car emblems. BMW, Jaguar, Toyota, Honda, Rover, GMC. You name it, I've got it. Audi. I've got them all. And now I realize what a stupid thing it was to do and how much damage I've caused to so many people who woke up in the morning and found they didn't have a car symbol anymore, and maybe they went out and bought a new one. It doesn't actually make any difference whether they bought a new one or didn't buy a new one. I've caused them the damage and caused them the loss regardless. How is it possible for me to do tshuva for that? The answer is, says the Shulchan Aruch, in Hoshin Mishpat, that the way to do this is that you'd have to donate the money, the monetary value of the damage that you've done, the monetary value of these car symbols, and that means the replacement cost. If each one costs $200-$300, you'd have to pay for the replacement cost, because you have to provide the owner with a new one if you can't return the old one to him, the one that you took from him. So what do you do with this money? You're supposed to give it to a public cause. That doesn't mean just charity. It doesn't mean just to give it to the poor. That's normal charity. Here, we're looking for you to fix up what you did wrong. The only way that you have any chance of fixing up what you did wrong is if you use the money for something that the general public are all going to get benefit from. Then what we're hoping is that the person that we stole from, they're also going to come and get benefit from this thing that I've done, and that's in some way returning to them what I stole from them. Let's say, for example, I'm going to build a public garden and donate it to the public. Right now I'm going to put in swings and slides, and then what we're hoping for is that the person that I've stolen from is going to one day come to this park, and his children are going to play on the swings, and he's going to enjoy the garden, and in some way that is considered as if I have returned to him what I took from him. That's the best you can do. It's not a complete tshuva, we're told, but it's the best that you can do. What about a child that stole? Right, who didn't steal candies from the supermarket when they were a little kid? Do you need to atone for those things? Do you need to do tshuva for those things? A child is not responsible for his actions. But nevertheless, there are opinions that if he had benefit from what he took, then he should be making some atonement for that. Moshe Feinstein writes that a person, when he grows up, should give a sum to charity in order to atone for all the times that while he was a child, maybe he might have caused damage to someone. It doesn't need to be a large sum, but it should be a sum that's a little bit more than the usual you would give to charity. A little bit, so it'll hurt you a little bit. Not hurt you, because it's all for the good, right? It'll make you feel you'll feel it. It's not just like giving a $1 bill to somebody. You should do something with the money as a one-time atonement for anything that you might have done while you were a child. But we see this important thing that we're not allowed to hurt each other. If we've hurt each other, then says Hashem, don't come to me and ask for tshuva. First of all, you have to go to the person that you've hurt, whether it's stealing or damaging or slandering. and you have to atone for whatever it is you've done to them. And only then can you come to me. Only then can you come to me. You see the amount of importance that Hashem puts on our relationships with other people. It's so important, says Hashem, that it's more important than your relationship with me. Until you've made peace with your fellow man, don't come to me to ask for peace and success and money and health and happiness. Only after you've appeased your other human beings can you come to me and ask for things like that. What an important message for us to understand the importance of behaving properly and doing good business and straight business and honest business with all our fellow men, whether they're Jews or non-Jews. It doesn't make any difference. There's a misconception that in some way there's some permission, or it's not such a serious thing to steal from a non-Jew. That's just not true. Right? There is an argument of whether it's an issur d'oraita or an issur d'rabbanan, but it's certainly an issur from. It's certainly a very, very serious issur. Right? There's no special leniency in stealing. You're not allowed to steal from a non-Jew. There's the famous comment of the Be'er HaGola. The Be'er HaGola writes that even though there's an opinion mentioned by the Rama that if a non-Jew were to make a mistake, for example, he's supposed to return you $1,000 and he gives you an extra $100. Makes a mistake in counting the notes, they get stuck together. And you notice it and he doesn't notice it, and there's no danger of there being a Chilul Hashem here because there's no way he's ever going to know. Then maybe you wouldn't have to return to him that $100. You wouldn't have an obligation from the Torah to return to him that $100 bill. However, writes the Be'er HaGola, and if someone who knows the Be'er HaGola and is used to studying the Shulchan Aruch, the Be'er HaGola normally just gives us source references. On the Shulchan Aruch on the side, he tells you where the Gemara is, and that's it, he doesn't do anything more. But we're here. When he got to this question, he wrote us a whole shiur klali about stealing from non-Jews. And he writes like this. He says that, I've seen many people in my time who didn't return things to non-Jews that were very, very valuable, and they made a lot of money out of it. But they all lost all their money. And when they died, they left nothing for their heirs. They died penniless. And on the other hand, he says, I've seen people who did return things to non-Jews when they didn't necessarily need to, and they all turned into very, very wealthy and very, very happy people. They had great wealth, and they left great wealth for their families after them. You see, the tremendous reward that can come for someone being straight and honest in all their business dealings. That's the true way to get success, to get monetary success. To be completely straight. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, the wisest of all people, writes at the beginning of Mishlei, that he's teaching you wisdom in order that you can do tzedakah u'mishpat b'meisharim. Tzedakah, charity. Mishpat is the law. B'meisharim. What's meisharim? Yesharim. It comes from the word yashar. Yashar in Hebrew means straight. That in addition to doing things according to the law, there's also such a thing as doing things straight. That means, explain the Mefarshim, is doing lifnim mishurat adin. Doing things that you're not obligated to do. You're not obligated to do it even according to the Torah, but nevertheless, to do it, that's the way that a nice Jewish boy is supposed to behave. That's the way that a good Jewish person behaves, and that is the behavior that is a tremendous Kiddush Hashem to the whole world, that they should see that we the Jews are doing honest business, making our money honestly, and doing win-win deals, not win-lose deals, win-win deals all the time. That's definitely the secret of success. To be yashar, to be straight. In our Beit Din, in Avat Shalom, the shtar borurut, that's the compromise agreement that we sign people on before we judge any case, where they are signing, they're accepting us to be the dayanim, to judge their case, and that they are obligating themselves to abide by whatever we rule. So there it says that we're going to judge according to, of course, the Torah, and we have permission to make a compromise. And in addition, we're going to judge according to what is yashar, what is straight. I used to have a question when I started sitting in the Beit Din and I saw this contract. What is yashar? I don't understand. Yashar is different from ruling according to the Torah. The Torah is not yashar. Why do we need to write that? We also have the option to decide the case according to yashrut, according to what is straight, what is right. Isn't that the Torah? So look in Mishlei and you'll see that no, it's not. There's another level. After the Torah, after Mishpat, after the Mishpat, they're still doing straight. There's Yashar, Mishpatu Meisharim, said Shlomo HaMelech. Mishpatu Meisharim, said King Solomon. That's wisdom. Not just to do things according to the law. There's within the law. Do within the law. Be straight. That's what it means in our contracts of arbitration agreements in Avat Shalom, in the Avat Shalom Beit Din, that it means you're going to do things in a straight way. We have the option to rule for what is right, which is not necessarily the mishpat. It's not necessarily going to be what comes out according to the law. The Torah tells us at the beginning of Sefer Shmot, Vayamat Yosef v'kol echav v'kol ador ahu. At the end of the book of Bereshit, Genesis, we find the Jewish people went down to Egypt, and they are in the land of Goshen, separated from the evil Egyptians who are involved in idol worship and all sorts of immoral and unethical behavior. The Jews were separate. That's how the book of Bereshit finishes off. And then suddenly you open the book of Shemot, and it says, Vayamat Yosef. And then Joseph died. V'kol echav. And so did all his brothers. V'kol hador ahu. And all that generation, the generation that saw Yosef, the generation that knew that Joseph and his brothers, that generation passed away and there was a new generation. And then we find that the Egyptians turned the Jews into slaves. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, as long as there were people alive from the generation of Yosef and his brothers, it wasn't possible for the Egyptians to make them slaves. While Yosef was alive, the Egyptians respected the Jews and considered that they were higher than they themselves were. They were better than the Egyptians. When Joseph died, they went down a level in the eyes of the Egyptians. And they became the same as us, no big deal. And then when the brothers died, then they became even lower. And they were considered even underneath the Egyptians. Once they were under the Egyptians, even so, it still wasn't possible to turn them into slaves, says the Or HaChaim, until something else happened. they lost their self-respect. As soon as the Jewish people lost their self-respect, and they too felt that they were beneath the Egyptians, then it was the time when it was possible to turn them into slaves. You can't turn a proud person into a slave. You can only turn a beaten person into a slave. You can only turn someone who not only do you consider them underneath you, but they themselves consider themselves underneath you. Only then can you make them into a slave. Only then will they accept the slavery. That's the way of our Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara makes us fall down. It makes you fall down and it wants you to lose your self-respect. It wants you to think that you're a nothing. It wants you to think that you're a Baal Averot. It wants you to think that you're someone who can't control himself. Once he's got you into that trap, that you feel that you're a nothing, then he's got you. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, when witnesses come to Beit Din to give testimony against someone, to accuse them of killing someone else, which means that they're now that person that they're testifying against is going to get the death penalty. Before we allow them to give their testimony, we have to give them a warning. We have to warn these witnesses so that we can know that they're going to tell the truth. We must warn them how important it is that they tell the truth, because here, someone is going to be killed because of their testimony. And therefore they have to be very, very specially careful. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us what the Dayanim, the Sanhedrin, would say to this person. And let's look at the way it was said. The Rambam also repeats this and writes this. Let's see how they would warn the person. They would say to him briefly like this. Man was created alone in the world. Right? Adam HaRishon, the first man, he was created just by him. It was just him. He was there with the whole world. No one else was there with him. Why was that done? To emphasize something. To emphasize the importance of each person. Each one of you is a full world. Each person is a full world. That just like Adam was, just like the first man created was, alone in the world. So everyone should think that he is so important. And anyone who causes one person to be lost from this world is as if he destroyed the whole world. That sounds like we're warning him, you know, if you give false testimony now and this guy's going to be killed because of your false testimony, then you're killing someone. Yeah, and this guy might be a very important person. The whole world was created for him. That's just, therefore you better be careful. It says, Rashi, that's not what's happening. This isn't saying that because of the person you're giving testimony against, that he might be killed by your testimony, you have to be specially careful. No. Says Rashi, we're warning you, the witness. We're saying to you, you are going to lose your whole world. You are an important person. The world was created for you, Mr. False Witness. Don't lose your whole world by giving false testimony now. You're a tremendous person. The whole world was created for you. Don't lie now and lose all that. It's not befitting you. It's not befitting you in any way. You're above that. That's the warning, says Rashi, that we're saying to the witness. Special attention should be paid here because you have to understand what's happening here. We have in front of us a man that we are worried is going to do a tremendous aveira right now. And we're told by the Gemara that what is the way to stop him from doing that aveira? The way to stop him isn't to say, hey, you're going to go to hell. Hey, you're going to be punished. No. That's not the way to warn him. That's not the way to stop him from doing the aveira. The way is, says the Gemara, to tell him how important he is, to tell him what a tremendous person he is, to tell him to realize how important he is, that the whole world was created for him. The whole world was created for each person. That's the way to stop him from doing an avera. Give him his self-respect. Let him respect himself. Once a person is respecting himself, not only can he not be enslaved, he can't be enslaved not by human beings, but also not by his yetzer hara. A respectful person doesn't go to places, to certain places where he shouldn't be. A respectable person doesn't look at things that he shouldn't be looking at. That's the way to stop someone from doing an avera, to make them feel respectable, to make them feel important. That's what will stop them from doing an avera. That's what the Gemara is teaching us, such an important lesson in education, not just of our children, but also of ourselves. But we have to feel, have self-respect. We have to have self-respect. Once we have self-respect, once we respect ourselves, then that will by itself keep us away from certain averot. It'll keep us away from places where we shouldn't be. It'll keep us away from people that we shouldn't be with. Because a respectable person behaves differently to an unrespectable person. And that is a very, very important message. And that's the important message of Nitzavim, of our parasha of Tshuva. As I said, my birthday, my bar mitzvah parasha, Bezrat Hashem, in the schut of this learning that we've done today, understanding what is Tshuva and how to do Tshuva and what is expected of us at this time of year, Bezrat Hashem, may we all together be zocha to have a new year of parnasah, of shefa, of bracha, of good health and peace to us, to Israel, and in the whole world.
The Beis Chabad on the Parsha series has been brought to you by the Beis Chabad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultations, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Chabad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.